Time now for another Habs 365 podcast. This is a special edition because, well, we're just very happy today. Brian Wild along with Grant McKagg, because we are from Canada, and Canada had one hell of a night, man. I jumped, and I was so excited when the 2-1 goal came in, and I don't know.
Hey, baby.
Oh, no. No, 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 no.
I want to know.
How many times was that song played? A lot.
You know, I heard that song in Hull for years and hated it, but I don't know. Last night I loved it.
Yeah, it never sounded
the
so good.
The girlfriend said, you know, I want to hear that song again. I swear it was 10 seconds before Steenbergen scored. She said, you know, I want to hear that song again. And then we did. So it was all kind of cool.
You know, it's funny, too, because if you look at the All-Star team and the MVP and the makeup of the team versus the individual stars of the other team and just somebody who loves individual stars, I just never felt that the team had it in them. I never felt that Canada was going to win. But
it's
just
funny,
depth throughout an entire lineup and good game plans and system, it can make a difference.
Sorry, if you look back at you know, a lot of the gold medal wins that Canada's had through the years, it often was teams like that didn't necessarily have the McDavids or you know, Lindroses or whatever. I mean, Lindros the year one year I think finished eighth or something like that. So it often is a team that doesn't have that has the Jason Botterills and the who won three straight and Jason Podolin. You remember those names? Like
yes, I do.
Never even really made the NHL, but were
Stephen Rice was a big name back.
Jason
then.
Ward.
Yeah, these guys never ended up being great NHLers, but
no,
they were great juniors,
and they had a good goalie and. You know, everybody checked their egos at the door. It's easy when you're at Jason Podolin. So, I mean, yeah, this team up front anyways didn't really have the star power that they often do. I mean, there wasn't a single top 10 forward draft pick. The only guy was Makar, and he ended up being sixth defenseman as far as ice time goes. So
right.
It was the non-stars that, you know, it was a team effort, goaltending, and that often, it gives you such a, you know, insight into how much chemistry and coming together, how important it is, especially at the junior level, where it's often not the teams that has the big star or the scoring power, it's the team with that's close-knit, and I think that team, well, they played great throughout the tournament, though. You know, you have to see, I think the defense was the key. It was so mobile and such. Victor Mete, I don't think this team wins if the Habs don't send Mete back. So,
well, look at his minutes. I mean, when a guy's playing that kind of minutes and all the defensive moments that mattered, he was out on the ice at the end of the game. He was on for 2-1 and 3-1.
Yeah, he just added so much speed and helped that transition. Gave Timmins the right partner, too, because Timmins isn't the fastest defenseman in the world. So he needed a fast guy as a partner, I believe.
But smart.
And it ended up. Oh, exactly. It ended up making a great pairing. The two smartest guys and the fastest in Mete paired with Timmins. I was surprised that they weren't, as it ended up, Clegg ended up getting the most ice time. But for me, that, you know, you could have played those guys 30 minutes in that goal. But that's another thing. Last year, Clegg and Favreau and those guys were played like 30 minutes in the gold medal game, 30 plus minutes, and they got tired. Well, you didn't have to do that with this team. There was enough depth on defense where they spread it out. The top three guys all were early 20 minutes, and that I think helped too, you know, where they didn't have to play a guy to death.
You know what really surprised me for Victor Mete is the – I thought when they sent him, being an NHLer with the experience, with the way he skates and knowing the way he played in London and the way he paired with Olevi, I really thought he was going to take a real offensive posture. But you just watch the way he played. He really – he took all that he'd learned from Shea Weber and – the comfort and the leadership that Weber brings to him and the way he taught him, I just felt like we were watching a defenseman that in his mind was thinking like a defenseman. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't thinking like, I got to add to the goal total here. Every move he made felt to me like he said to himself, what's the smart play? Get the puck up. Get the puck out of where it's dangerous. I just felt like when Shea Weber says, and you ask him, as I did at training camp, what's the most important thing that a defenseman has? And he said, his brain. And I just felt like Mete was playing with his brain so unbelievably well. I was just thrilled for him.
Well, it could have been, you know, the voice of Claude Julien roaring in his head, too, you know, like... Defense, you know. don't rush. No, you know, could have been Claude's voice in his head, too, you know.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think he carried the puck up, too.
Oh, no, of course. But, no, that's right. No, it was
I don't think Claude wants to carry the puck up.
Claude lost the last two hairs on his head. They're watching Mete take those off, you know, those trips behind
the goal. I think he'll get more freedom to do that in the future, though, right?
Well, hopefully. I mean, I think he showed that he's so fast. Like he can get back so quickly that...
He was lightning.
You know.
Yeah. It was lightning
watching
him.
He can do that, and then he can get back, and it's not a big deal. I mean, he's still going to get a little faster, and... at the junior level, he can get away with it. And at the NHL level, eventually, as he gets even quicker, he'll be able to get away with it too. I mean, his speed isn't quite as, doesn't stand out quite as much at the NHL level at this point because he's 19 years old and he's still, you know, he's still going to get a little faster. And once that happens, once he's dominant speed at the NHL level, then I think you'll see, which I think will happen. You know, that he'll be able to get a little more involved as far as rushing the NHL level because he'll have the speed to get back and catch these guys. You know, as it stands right now, if he takes a trip up and McDavid rushes back the other way, he's not catching him, you know, for instance. Like, I mean, obviously McDavid's the primo example, but I think, with time. But he's, and I've said it before, and he's first and foremost is a defensive defenseman. He doesn't have a very good shot. He's never going to score a lot of goals at the NHL level. Last year in London, he scored like 16, but I think most of them were on rushes and just using his speed, you know, maybe coming in and tipping stuff
Inching.
In and stuff. But
But
in the NHL, I'd be quite surprised if he ever scored 10 plus goals in the NHL. Like, that's not going to be his game. He just doesn't have the shot. He never, you know, if at 19 you have a pop gun shot, that's never going to be his strength. So,
Do you think he's top four or top two? On a well-constructed team. I mean, he was top two because they didn't have Markov there at the start of the season, so they tried him. But on a well-constructed team, is he top two? Can he reach that level?
Depends on your definition of top two, I guess. I mean, he may play on a top pairing, but end up with the third most ice time. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes,
I think he might be like somebody that plays on a top pairing and on some PK and maybe a second power play unit. I think probably ideally he's on your second pairing and then gets PK time and second power play, which may end up being your second most minutes. His upside is somewhere between a two and a three, but he may also be a four. So somewhere between two and four, which is,
a good steal at 100, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right, I've been wanting to ask you this for about a week. It's a hypothetical. I just want to have a little fun with it. All right, so the Canadians are making a trade. And I don't need to say who the Canadian player is. It's not a part of the equation here, but they're making a trade. And they have an opportunity in this trade to get a guy that's already been drafted. So we don't want the Tkachuks in here and the Dahlins, okay? But a guy that you're going to take from an organization already that's been drafted. Who from the tournament, or it doesn't even have to be in the tournament, like who played in the tournament, but who do you want to come to the Montreal Canadiens that's been drafted already to help the Montreal Canadiens?
Robert Thomas immediately comes to mind.
As a center?
Yeah. Yeah. I think
and that's not even implausible. That's the St. Louis Blues, and they're very deep at center. And, you know, to put the name Max Pacioretty out there, that's a plausible trade.
Yeah.
Do you make that trade?
But there's Pacioretty for Thomas?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do. Undoubtedly.
You know the fan base will think you're crazy because they don't understand a lot. I don't want to say the whole fan base, but a part of the fan base doesn't understand that you're paying for the years forward of a player, not the years behind of a player. So I always hear the sentence, well, he's a 35-goal scorer, and I want to answer, well, he was a 35-goal scorer.
Yeah.
Or 39, you know, but you're paying for the next 8 years of that player, and the last three or four might be fairly dubious, so be careful. Whereas Thomas is one of the, you know, best-looking young centers in hockey, and you are paying for 7 years, three of which are entry-level cheap to help your cap, to get another style of Pacioretty player to replace the one you lost. And I think it's just good business. So that's my take of agreeing with you that one-for-one, I would definitely do that trade too.
And I don't think it would be a one-for-one.
You think they throw in a second-rounder or something?
Well, I don't think Bergevin will trade Pacioretty unless he gets
even more than
Thomas
that.
And yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have a feeling. Not that I mean, I would do it one for one personally. I think
right.
That's how much I like Thomas, and how worried I am about Pacioretty going forward.
Yep.
And I just think even just getting rid of him will help the team at this point. I think that it's become an albatross, or like it's hurting chemistry right now. I think it's a step forward just even having him gone at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that it's necessarily, I'm not saying he's a cancer and all that. I think he's a good, you know, he's good in the dressing room and all that stuff. I just did the distraction of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And his despondency with not producing, he's not leading on the ice. He's not like, I don't think he's a good leader in the dressing room and in the media and stuff, but I think there should be a different captain, a change. Like, I think it has to happen. And just that in itself will be a positive going forward, I believe.
I don't want to say anything negative about Max when I finish my argument on this. Instead, I'm going to talk about the positive of someone else, because you just mentioned a new captain. And Shea Weber, by anyone's account in hockey, whether you talk to coaches, general managers, teammates of his, you will not find a single person that doesn't say that Shea Weber and Carey Price, who can't be captain because of this position, are two of the greatest leaders they've ever met in hockey. Jeff Petrie told me, why did you want to stay with the Montreal Canadiens and not test the free agent market? And he says, I want to play for Carey Price. And the same kind of sentence is said about Shea Weber all the time. He's a natural-born leader. I don't know what is in a man that makes him as an amazing leader. I frankly don't have it in me, and I know it. But some people you just want to follow. And when they talk, you listen. And when they have something to say, you stop whatever you're doing. And you just want to follow that person. And these are the type of sentences that people say about Shea Weber. If it happens for a great hockey reason that Max gets traded, they have the greatest, one of the greatest leaders in hockey history already playing for them, and that rotation almost needs to happen for the team to go forward.
I agree.
So I agree again.
And as I say, I think whoever it is, if it ends up being like a Thomas, I mean, I don't know that. I think St. Louis would be to deal Thomas in a pretty high pick for Pacioretty. I'm not sure if I'm St. Louis, I'd do that. But certainly if it's offered from Montreal,
well, they're going for
you, I would take it.
They're going
yeah.
for it. I mean, St. Louis has flat out even said it. You don't hear it much. They want to add top six rank. They've got that amazing first line, but then they drop. And if they want to go for it, and they're so damn close, they could say, listen, yeah, we lost Thomas, but, you know, we still have Costin. We still have Kyrou. We still have the injured Fabry. I mean, there's talent that, you know, they are so deep, they could lose one, and the fan base wouldn't go crazy, and they wouldn't, I don't think, drop so much. And then they could maybe sign Pacioretty, and he would play a smaller role there, which would be, I think, really good for him in his career, to be honest.
Sure.
I really do. I think he's not the guy everybody goes to in the room and doesn't feel the weight of that captaincy and being the go-to guy all the time in the room. I think it would really help his career, actually. So I think it could be a real win-win for everybody. I like that you picked that name, too. He didn't have an amazing tournament, though. I thought he would be a little bit better, but he was good. Who did you think the best Canadian player was?
Yeah, just to get, I just wanted to, because
yeah,
it's
before
hard
that,
to get
absolutely,
an
yeah,
edge in word-wise sometimes. St. Louis is, I mean, out of the expansion teams from 66, we're old enough to remember, they're 67, right? I mean, they're the only team left that, the California's gone, obviously, but everybody else has won a cup. They haven't won a cup in 50 years. So I think the fan base, you know, wouldn't mind them going for it. They've never won a cup. So why not? You know, I mean, I had a St. Louis fan saying to me, oh, well, they want to get younger. I said, try telling that to a 60-year-old that's been a St. Louis fan all his life that has never seen them hoist a Stanley Cup to read, oh, well, they want to get younger. They're like the top team in the West. Go for it. This is a year.
Yeah.
They've got Costin. They've got Kyrou. They've got a whole bunch of – they made some really good picks in the last few years. So there's some depth there on the prospect end. Deal Thomas, while you still have that depth. You got a guy like Fabry that's out that's going to come back that can play center. You just traded for Shen, who's young. I mean, there's some good future at center for that team, but even without Thomas. So, yeah, go for it. I really believe that it's a good fit, but there's a lot of good fits when you look at it.
Who else?
Pacioretty.
Who else?
Well, I mean, even teams that aren't in the – I mean, you've mentioned it more than once, even Edmonton, and they're not even going for it would be a good fit for him. I mean,
and Ray Ferraro did too this week mention it.
I don't think it has to be a team that's, you know, again, you hear people saying, well, it's got to be a cup contender. Well, first of all, there's 25 cup contenders. You know, there's teams that are 2 points out of a playoff spot. Someone just posted there's 6 teams in the East that are in the Metro that are within like 2 or 3 points of each other. That on the playoff bubble.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not 15 or 16 playoff contenders right now. There's 20 to 25. So as far as I mean, you get looking at just about every one of these teams, someone that's 2 points out of a playoff spot right now, would it not be a nice boost for them to pick up a Pacioretty to help them get over the hump? And then who knows, Polo Nashville, sneak into the playoffs. And I mean, there's so much parity these days that who knows, you can be seventh, eighth and end up in the Stanley Cup final. So I think there's a lot of potential teams that you could go to.
And I'd like to mention Carolina as a team here
in
the argument you're having. You've got an organization that has a fan base that is a little bit hungry right now. There's been a lot of disappointment for a long, long time.
New owner.
They just made it to the final playoff spot with a nice week, but they've got a lot of people nipping at their heels to take that spot from them. I mean, this is just the perfect example of the ownership going, guys, let's make the playoffs this year. It's been a long road for these long-suffering fans. So I agree.
And Jake Bean.
100%. Yep.
Is
sure.
a good example of, you know, a kid that just played in the World Juniors that would be a nice fit for the Habs going forward.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be a
very
top.
Nice.
He'll be a top four defenseman.
Very nice
in the
fit.
NHL. And they've got Hayden Fleury, who just come. They've got Hanifin. They've got Slavin. They've got all sorts of good young defensemen, where they have a surplus.
Yeah,
it's an excellent fit. And
Fault's
I mean,
still
I
young
can go
too.
Over. Pardon me.
I said Fault's still young too.
Oh yeah, no. Yeah, they have like that's another great fit. There's. I think the longer the Habs wait, I think they should do it soon. And I hope they do. And but don't rush it just for the sake of doing it. Obviously, have some patience. But I do think that that there's a lot of potential teams that he could go to. And as far as your, I forget now what your question was.
About 7 minutes ago.
Yeah.
It was who is your favorite player? Who do you think is going to be the best professional from the Canadian team? I mean, the Swedish team's an easy one, right? That's probably Dahlin is going to be your best professional.
Oh, I guess so, yeah.
Right.
Oh.
Will Mittelstadt be your best American professionally?
Oh, perhaps.
Or Brady?
I think Tkachuk probably
mm-hmm.
would be my pick.
Interesting.
Paling might be a better NHLer than Mittelstadt. Mittelstadt's a little older. This was his last World Junior.
People forget that, too. I mean, people forget that so often, what you do at 18 versus 19. Look at the Vancouver product. Pedersen, terrible last year, really good this year.
Yeah.
18 versus 19.
I mean, people can get a little bit caught up on a player stick handling, and Mittelstadt's not a great skater, right? I don't think he'll be able to do a lot of the things that he is able to get away with at this level, at the NHL level.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. I think he'll be...
No, but you're right, yeah.
I think he'll be an outstanding NHLer, but I don't think he'll be as dominant at the NHL level as you've seen him at this tournament this year. But certainly, yes, he can be a top six forward, you know, probably end up playing on the wing. Certainly not going to supplant Jack Eichel as the number one center in Buffalo. He's not that good.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe he's a first-line winger or second-line center, and that's pretty darn good. But Tkachuk definitely can be a first-line winger going forward, and I think you have to keep in mind that he's a year younger than Mittelstadt, and that... I think down the road, his just the way his game translates to the pro level, that he's probably the best pro prospect going forward. But I would put Paling and in the mix with Mittelstadt for sure, and
what about
Adam Fox as well.
What about Bellows?
Yeah, no, I think he's a one dimensional again. Look, worked at the junior level, and he'll score some goals in the NHL, but he doesn't pass the puck. He's shoot, and that's it. I mean, his one assist total is that's what you see is what you get in that sense. And in the NHL, you got to he has a chance to be a Pacioretty-type player, I suppose, but even Pacioretty's got better vision than Bellows and more willing to pass the puck. So a Pacioretty type is a pretty good prospect, but I think, you know, Tkachuk, Mittelstadt, and even Paling all have more upside than that. True upside as more complete players. And, but yeah, Bellows could be a 30 goal scorer in the NHL. That's
a good number.
That's for sure. But he's not a great skater either. He's and he doesn't pass the puck. I mean, it drives goats crazy. You know, everyone will tell you that, like, he may win the Cy Young Award in the NHL someday. As far as the Canadian, that's a really good question. But I think the obvious answer is Makar. You have to bear in mind that 12 months ago he was playing the Alberta Junior Hockey League. And now he, I think he led the, did he lead the World Juniors in scoring? He was tied, I believe, at the very least for points. And he was playing 10 minutes a game. So from the Alberta Junior Hockey League to, you won yet another award at every WJAC has been in. He won the Best Defenseman. The last two.
He was the only All-Star for Canada in the tournament.
Yeah, the Royal Bank Challenge the last 2 years, the Royal Bank Cup for the Tier 2 juniors, he was the best defenseman, best MVP. He just, every single competition that this kid is in, he ends up coming back. Like he needs a huge mantle case, even one bigger than Elias Anderson's,
What about Kyrou?
What's up?
What about Kyrou? How good a pro do you think he can be?
I'd list him. I'd probably list five or six guys ahead of Kyrou on that team.
Oh, yeah? Wow. Give them.
Well, Thomas, for sure. I mean.
Okay, Thomas.
Without a doubt. And don't forget that
Mete.
Kyrou's a year older than Thomas. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's Hart, four
maybe
already.
Even.
Pardon me?
Maybe even Hart.
Right.
But definitely.
Sure, of course. He's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like maybe three or four to Bean,
the Ottawa.
A number of. No.
No,
I don't.
No, you don't think he's going to be a great pro? Everybody was like, that four-goal game, everybody's going nuts.
Well, again, 19 years old, and he scored, tipped in two goals and had two big games in the tournament, but you don't get over
on the overall,
over
you didn't see him.
You don't get
it,
over it. This is one term, and you don't judge a player's upside by how they do at the World Juniors alone. You watch these guys, it's not the first time seeing these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a guy has a couple of big games at the World Juniors, and all of a sudden, this happens every year. Martin Riway was, a top five Habs prospect in a lot of pundits' minds right up until this year because of what he did at World Juniors a couple of times. And, I just shook my head. I watched him his whole junior career, and I never did not see somebody that's games translated to the pro NHL level at all.
Right.
Like not even
that's
close.
The difference. Yeah, that's the difference.
It's such a huge step. You can dangle. You can. Kyrou's a nice skater. He's got the skating speed, but he's a perimeter player. And at the NHL level, he won't be a dominant skater. He'll be a good skater,
mm-hmm.
But you need more than that at the NHL level. You got to be able to get to the dirty areas, even net cash. There's still a lot of scouts don't know just how great he'll be in the NHL.
But
he's certainly a better player than Kyrou,
mm-hmm.
Sedina's got the power. He's got the, he goes to the dirty areas. He's already strong enough to muscle his way to the net, which you have to be able to do in the NHL. But great hands, competitive, smart. And, if you wanted to compare Kyrou's shot, for instance, to Zadina's, there's no – it's just night and day. He's a goal scorer. He's going to be a goal scorer at any level. But he also passes the puck, and I've also never seen him play a poor game. He's consistent. He's competitive. He's got it all. So at this point, he's top three. Kid that didn't play in the tournament, someone like I ended up texting Ray Farrell, and because he never even mentioned his name as being in the top five, but I don't know an NHL scout that doesn't have Adam Boqvist in their top four, but he wasn't there, so right out of sight, out of mind. Right. People was just assume, oh, he can't be. But you look back at, well, last year's a good example. Cal McCarr didn't play in the World Junior. He went top four. There's always kids that just about every year, if you look at a draft, there's a kid that was in the top five that didn't play in the World Junior.
Remember the reaction when Pedersen was taken? Everybody was laughing at Vancouver. They were laughing. They were like, what are they thinking? Vancouver blows it again. One bunch of idiots. His tournament was terrible. 1 year later, he puts in an amazing tournament. You know, you're right. I mean, there are big differences. You've got 18 versus 19. You've got out of sight, out of mind versus there and not there. And then, like you said, the consistency, too, is an excellent point you make. You got a guy who puts in one good game and everybody goes freak crazy because he's feeling it on the night, but then he goes back to juniors and he kind of falls asleep for a long parts of the season. So these are good points.
Yeah. Oh, no. I mean, you especially don't judge a kid in his draft year like Pedersen last year from the World Juniors, especially at that age, you know. Like what I'm saying about 18, 19-year-olds, well, it's even more true for a kid in his draft year. I mean, they're not even supposed to be there, you know, the audiences.
Like, sure, and look at Poehling this year. He took a bit of a minor role. He didn't get the power play. He worried about his defensive assignments, and it was his first year, and consider his age as well. He'll probably be a much better player, and I didn't think he's bad, don't get me wrong, but he'll be a much better player when he's back next year.
Oh, I mean, I don't see who else would be the number one center, you know?
Right.
Because, I mean, Brown will be gone, Middlestad will be gone. He had a much bigger, larger role than Josh Norris, who was picked ahead of him in the draft, which is, I think that's what you have to look at more than anything, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here was the other kid, the other center that you have to compare him to at this point, that was drafted 19th and he was 25th. Well, Who had the larger role?
Yeah.
I mean, you might have heard Norris's name about three times in the tournament. Like, he
absolutely.
Was a fourth line center.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, you know, people, that he was drafted ahead of Poehling because he was supposedly may have had more offensive upside. Well, thing is, he played on the under-18 team all year, and then Poehling goes to these tournaments. Well, they're not going to – he was their number one center all year. They're not going to bring in a kid. I mean, there's that part of your team chemistry thing, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to bring in a kid, jettison him in and put him. Say, well, you're not the number one center anymore. This new guy is, right?
Yeah.
So then a lot of scouts think, oh, well, Norris was the number one center, so he must have more offensive upside. Well, no. Poehling was asked to play a role, and he did, and he was their penalty killer and great on it and still managed to score a few goals too. And so if you really, you know, you really thought about it and put everything together, I ended up having Poehling ahead of Norris, and I was a bit surprised that Norris ended up going ahead of him. But I think time will tell that Poehling's the better prospect. And next year, I think you'll see that Poehling is the guy up front. If Tkachuk's still in college, probably one more year. It'll be Poehling and Tkachuk will be on that top line, unless Hughes is. That's true. There's the kid, the 17-year-old kid, Jack Hughes, Quinn's brother.
Mm-hmm.
He is he's dynamite. You'll see him. You like Clayton Keller? This kid's even better.
Oh yeah.
So yeah. So he'll be
Jack Hughes. Okay, there you go.
Jack
before
Hughes.
That name. Yeah.
So it'll be Hughes and Poehling next year, but, I mean, Hughes will only be in his draft year, right? So they'll probably – Poehling will wear the C, I'm positive, next year, and he'll be the go-to guy at center, and it'll be fun to watch. And hopefully Primo's playing as well. I mean, you saw the stats I sent on Twitter there where he's beating it, you know, just outrageous stats as a freshman in the NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised Trevor Timmons had mentioned to me that he was, you know, wasn't sure why Primo wasn't on this. And a couple other scouts have mentioned it too. So next year, I think he may even be the favorite to because Wohl and Ottinger will be gone, and Petruzzelli is not developing like they'd hoped, so there's a really good chance Primo is on that team as well in the starting goalies. So your number one center and your starting goalie hopefully next year will be Habs prospects on the U.S.
That's incredible, yeah. Hey, listen, what you were talking about led me to the final thought here, and when you were talking about Makar and the meteoric rise there and what one age can produce to the next age, it makes me think of my very last question is Josh Brook, what one age to the next age can produce. And you've been talking about his plus minus and what he's been able to do coming off of that injury, which he doesn't seem to have been suffering from in any capacity at all. If you can just enlighten everybody on what this pick said, I have to be honest, I know very, very little bit about him.
Well, he's a 30-minute a night defenseman on what is probably the best junior team in the CHL. He plays all situations. Tim Hunter's his coach, who, you know, was the assistant coach.
The pugilist, Tim Hunter?
Yeah. He was the Ducharme's assistant here at the World Juniors.
Mm-hmm.
Timmy Hunter is his coach and just loves him. Last year he played him 25 to 30 minutes, second half of the year. He was already their go-to guy last year. And that's why I never quite understood why he wasn't more highly regarded in the draft, because as far as I was concerned, he was one of the top five defensemen in WHL last year. And this year, I don't know. I mean, maybe arguably Clegg, because he's been putting up the stats, but that might be it as far as better defensemen in the WHL this year. So I don't see how he can't be part of the World Junior next year. He's a really good bet on the Canadian team. So that's also encouraging. And he's just excellent mobility. Puck movement is also excellent. He rarely makes a poor first pass. I think he's got top four defenseman potential for sure. Maybe even more potential than Juleson at the end of the day, but they may end up being a nice second pairing on defense down the road. You put Mete into the mix as well. Walford is also impressing me in Victoria. I think he's got number five written all over him, and he might even get a shot at the World Juniors next year. So there's some nice defense pieces going forward. I think that all that's missing really is but if the Habs pick top 10 this year and they end up getting a shot at a Dahling or a Boqvist or Dobson or Hughes, that's the missing piece as far as the future goes on defense, and then they're set. So I like the Habs, what they're doing, and if they make some deals as they miss the playoffs here, which is pretty, you've seen the math, and we've all did the math, and they'd have to get 58 points in the second half to make the playoffs, and only Tampa's and Vegas have gotten that in the first half, so.
Yeah, they have to tear it up.
They have to be realistic that it's just not going to happen, so they've got to be sellers and stock up on picks and get some, fill those last two or three holes that we see going forward in the future, and hope that these guys pan out.
I apologize, but one of the things you said led me to one more question that I have to ask. You mentioned the four defensemen there in the top 10, depending on where they pick. As it would stand now, and obviously that can change, and that's why we're going to all be following your draft coverage leading up to your draft guide as you send it out in early to mid-June. My thought on that is you make a top 10 list, as in top to, well, you make a much longer list, but you have top 10 based on, you know, best to next best, next best. But if you were taking it as Trevor Timmons, would you favor those four defensemen that you mentioned over mostly wingers this year that are available? There's not really a hot center, or would you just go best available? Do you understand what I'm getting at here? It was a really convoluted question I asked there. But you understand what I'm saying? Like, would you say, okay, obviously...
All things equal?
Yeah, all things being equal, do you take those, like, the Quebec Major Hockey League defenseman, Dobson?
Right.
Do you take him over, let's say, the next winger up?
Oh,
well, not
Zadina. Okay.
Zadina's got to be a class apart, right? Wouldn't Zadina
Well, that's
be...
what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I think if it comes down to, like, Svechnikov and Hughes and Dobson,
yeah,
I think you've got a real, you've got a quandary on your hands.
Right. Okay, that's what I'm getting at.
But, I mean, Tkachuk or Zadina, I take them over Dobson and Hughes.
Right. So the best of the best at wing over the second tier of defensemen, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Sure. Sure.
Right. But the first tier of defensemen, Boqvist,
but
Dahlin
or Boqvist
over the
Zadina. Just
right. Got it.
Wow. Okay. It's just so much value. I mean, it's the perfect fit.
Yeah.
I mean,
got it.
Boqvist will be their the Habs Carlson. I mean, do you take a Carlson or do you take a Pacioretty? You know. Or,
right.
I mean, Zadina could be a better than Pacioretty, but, I mean, not much.
He's no Ovechkin.
Well, not. I don't think he's
yeah.
at that level, you know.
Right.
He's not a 50-goal scorer. I think he's
right.
a future 40-goal guy on the wing. And Boqvist could be a 70-point defenseman. So, you know, you take the number one power play quarterback, 60 to 70 point defenseman over the.
I've given you an idea. here it comes. You ready?
Okay.
If I were Trevor Timmins' list, if like starting in March or April you did one of those, I would really read that. I might even subscribe, though $4 is expensive. No, but seriously, all joking aside. If I were, like, you're going to have your top 10 and your top, you know, the draft guide's going to be, I mean, that thing was amazing last year. I was so impressed by it. So you're going to have it for everybody. But, boy, I would sure love to see a little top 10 of if I were Trevor Timmins. That would be cool to see, too.
Have to put one of those behind a paywall and see if we can get three or four.
That would be cool. That would be cool. If I were Trevor Timmins,
nice.
Top 10 list. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's really tricky, right? I mean, you've said it. I mean, definitely those two Ds stand apart. And then you got a couple wingers that stand apart. But the second tier of wingers versus the second tier of defensemen, as we roll along here up until draft day, their ebbs and flows is going to be really, really interesting because the guy who was number two heading into the tournament does not leave number two heading out of the tournament. That's for sure. Svechnikov, you know, it's not even, I mean, he didn't have a great tournament, and Zadina really did, so there's been some nice ebb and flow, and I know that you have a lot of great contacts, of which Trevor Timmins is one of them, so, I mean, that's going to be fun to follow going forward, and I hope you feel that's an interesting endeavor. All right, man, that was fun. Wow, that was fun. I think we just spent 55 minutes probably. I can't see the time until I hang up the call, but that was fun. Thank you, sir. All right.
Well, for sure. Thanks, man.
Okay, that is another Habs 365 podcast with Grant McKay and Brian Wilde.